Good afternoon, everyone. If you could just get seated, we can begin. Thanks. Okay, let's get started. We have a lot to discuss this afternoon. So, welcome to Cartagena for the first of our GAC meetings over the next week or so. And before we begin with the first anticipated agenda item on UGTLDs, I have an unexpected issue to raise. And as it turns out, the Indian Secretariat is unable to be here in Cartagena to provide support to this meeting. So I would just like guidance or permission from colleagues here for me to make a request to ICANN for that support to be provided this week, because it is an unanticipated development and unfortunate, but as I say, due to unforeseen circumstances, they are unable to provide that support to us this week. So may I take it that that I may make that request to ICANN? Okay. Thank you. Okay. So new GTLDs, as promised, Kurt Pris is here to present to us over the next 45 minutes or so, various issues that are outstanding with the new GTLD program. And hopefully Kurt will be able to respond to some questions and clarifications. Would you prefer to do that at the end, Kurt, or as you go through?
Yeah, I can take questions as we go. The presentation is kind of broken up into blocks, so maybe we can set them like that.
Okay, let's do that. All right, so without any further ado, over to you, Kurt.
Thanks very much, and thank you. It's really good to see everybody again, and I'm glad everybody made it here. I've been here for several days and found it quite delightful, especially when it stops raining. We've broken up. Everybody knows Karen Lentz, who's my co-worker and has done a tremendous amount of work on this program. We've broken up the presentation here into a couple segments. One is what are the guidebook updates? So this is the fifth version of the guidebook, and what's changed. So we wanted to let everybody know what that was, and then a brief discussion of the overarching issues, the so-called overarching or most important issues that have been worked over a period of quite some time, and give you a status update there. And then finally, there are some specific GAC topics that we got from the different letters we've received from the GAC. So I wanted to touch on those issues, but certainly if I missed any of them, that would be a time to bring them up there. So go ahead, Karen. The first part of the talk is about what's changed in the guidebook, and I suppose I should. I'll try one here since this is my first presentation. We'll see how it goes. But one question is, what the heck is a proposed final guidebook? We've called them draft guidebooks up to now. A proposed draft. I think the model I think most about when this was published is how ICANN goes about its budgeting process, and the problem we tried to confront was how do we ever post a version of an applicant guidebook and not have it for public comment? Say, well, this is the final guidebook. There's no more comment, and the board will consider it. So you really can't, right? Because there'll be comments anyway. So looking at the ICANN budget model, we post a proposed budget for consideration, and then the board can consider the budget right up until the time it votes on budget and can consider comment on that budget right up until that time. So it's sort of a mechanism to allow ongoing comment while the guidebook could be considered for approval. So if you just like the budget, the board could,
elect to vote on the guidebook and vote its approval or not. But there's other options too, right? The board could, as it's done with the budget in the past, direct based on comment that certain changes be made in the guidebook. So it could make an approval of the guidebook conditional on changes. It could direct certain changes be made and then have the guidebook resubmitted or for approval. Or it could send the guidebook back and say, look, there's more community discussion required on these issues, more in-depth discussion, so we need to do that. So it provides the opportunity to put up for potential approval of the guidebook, but not foreclose public comment. And so that's the thinking about what a proposed guidebook is. So there are a number of red lines to the guidebook, and as usual, boy, it's bad that we say as usual, but we've published a red line and a clean version of the guidebook along with the comment analyses as is usually done. And what's changed in this guidebook? Well, Module 1 kind of describes the whole process and the requirements for applicants. So there's commitments in Module 1 about delegation rates. Delegation rates are very important when it comes to root zone stability, because if we don't exceed a certain delegation rate, then there's the thought that there's no issues with root zone stability. So that's important. We've amended significantly background screening criteria. You'll remember in the last guidebook we used the word terrorist, and that was very controversial, so that's been deleted. And instead, we've worked with a firm and some standards in some existing developed standards in background screening on certain criteria and incorporated those into the guidebook. I think everybody here might be familiar with the lifting of restrictions on cross-ownership. So there might be questions on that. There's placeholders for applicant support and the work that a working group is doing to provide support to applicants, both non-economic support and then a way to move forward into financial support for applicants later on. And then there's some more discussion about IDN variants. In Module 2, the string requirements, what a TLD string can be, is changed because the IETF is about to publish a new RFC on that. And essentially what that says is no numbers unless it's an XN-dash-dash, which is the PUNY code for an IDN. But otherwise, in ASCII, there won't be any numbers in TLDs. And then we've included another list, a UNESCO list, into the number of regions and continents that are protected. And that was for a specific reason that I can't remember now. But we've slightly expanded the names of continents and regions that are protected by the inclusion of that UNESCO list. In Module 3, which is dispute resolution and objections, we've expanded protections and included protection for IGOs at the top level based on discussion that we've had all through this and then recent letters we've gotten from WIPO and the OECD. In the community objection, there was a complete defense to community objections, and that was sort of controversial. So that's been eliminated. And instead, every community objection has a complete hearing on its merits. And then something I'm sure else we can talk about is the objection formerly known as morality and public order, and it's not certain that it's called limited public interest objection, but that might be one of a series of candidates of names. It includes amendments to that objection that stem from the working group, the so-called REC 6 working group that has been working on this. So it provides for government notification, so governments can provide notification to TLD applicants if it so chooses about controversial names. It adds treaties to be considered as part of the standards and changes some references. So now we've reworded it to refer to principles of international law. And if you read the report, you'll understand why that changes.
Module 4 is perfect. But we talked, you know, Module 4 is the community priority evaluation. If a community TLD wants a priority, there are a lot of discussion and analysis went into the scoring mechanisms and the criteria, and there was some tweaking, but in the end, no change. And in Module 5, we provided additional detail on the board role, how the board will remain in charge of oversight for the process, but not approve each and every application, but will rather receive evaluator reports, quality assurance reports, and you know, take measures to ensure that the process is operating as the board tells us to operate through its approval when it happens. In the trademark clearinghouse, we got a lot of comments last time about specifics regarding the nature of substantive review of trademarks before they're entered into the clearinghouse. So the definitions there are more in line with actual law, especially in European countries. In URS, we think we've strengthened the uniform rapid suspension of domain names by shortening the response time given to registrants, and we think there's other protections for registrants besides the response time. So we tried to put the rapid back in URS in accordance with comments from the business and IP constituency. And in the registry agreement associated with the changes on vertical integration, in order to prevent domain name abuse, we've inserted a code of conduct. So those are the changes with the guidebook. I don't know if we want to, if that's the right level of discussion, or you want me to dive into more detail. When I, you know, if you're new, I guess I should apologize. But when I look around the table, I see a lot of acquaintances, and we've had this talk before. So I tried to keep it at a level that reflected their understanding.
My sense is that a more detailed discussion would be useful. And so if you could go into a bit more detail on each of those topics, I think some are probably of more interest than others in terms of what the GAC would give priority to. So we would spend more time on those. And before you do, I just wanted to mention that we have requested that the air conditioning be turned on or turned up in this room. I know it's quite warm, so hopefully that will happen soon. And also, in order to assist with the transcription later on of the recording of these meetings, if you could state your name clearly when you're speaking, in addition to me doing my best to recognize who's asking for the floor, that would help the transcription. So, okay, back to you, Kurt. Thank you.
I don't know what to say next. Okay, could we? Do you think we could just take, like, say, questions on module one? Because I could, you know, I could talk 10 minutes about each one, but then we'd be here for a really long time. And there's, you know, there's three other segments to the presentation. So let's see. I'll just pick some. So, go
ahead. If I may, Sweden, Maria, please.
This is Maria Hall from the Swedish government. Thank you very much for the presentation. It was a little bit brief, of course, but we had the chance now, I think, to go a little bit more into details. And actually, briefly, or more in general, it would be very interesting to listen to you a little bit more how you have considered the GAC advice concerning this actually is the draft of the guidebook version 4, and how much that corresponds to what is happening in this version. And also, if you have had any concerns about our proposals or advice, or if you could meet them or not in that case, why could you, why couldn't you? Or a little bit more that one, that would be very helpful, I think. Thank you very much.
I have the GAC letter, so I don't have to bring it up online. So can I just talk for a minute about headings in the GAC letter and how we address them or how we discuss them. So on root zone scaling, I think that the guidebook and the GAC are well aligned. We've had long discussions with ESAC and RSAC, and the key to this is really that the evaluation process is sort of self-limiting. In other words, we'll only process 500 applications at one time at a maximum. So that means that even if after you do a bunch of math with timelines, even if we get infinitely many applications, we're going to be delegating no more than 1,000 TLDs a year. We expect to be delegating to 215 to 250 TLDs a year. So having that discussion with ESAC and RSAC put to rest a lot of the concerns about root zone scaling. Plus, one of the issues with root zone scaling was that we were concerned about the nearly coincident introduction of new gTLDs, IDNs, IPv6, and DNSSEC at the same time. So a lot of that train's left the station. The root zone, the sign, some IDNs are delegated, some IPv6 is deployed. And so that sort of coincident introduction is not an issue, too. The root zone is operating fine. So with certain caveats, it's, you know, I think if we were to have a session to discuss differences, there would be no differences in root zone scaling. We certainly have that. On market and economic impacts, do we have a slide on? Yeah. Is this all right that we kind of go off like this? Okay. So, you know, on market impacts, we've done. You know, we've collaborated with several sets of economists. The last one is a report that was just published. So, I think we're up to speed on that. Compass Lexicon through Dennis Carlton did a earlier economic study on the introduction of new gTLDs. Greg Rosten and Michael Katz did a the study that was just issued and the study before that. Josh Wright and Steve Salop did a study on vertical integration, and CRA did a study on the marketplace in general, and then more specifically vertical introduction. So several reports have been issued. I'm just going to touch on some of the details of this last report. This last report uses the past as a prologue, so it looks at existing gTLDs. Specifically, it looks at COM, it looks at .museum, it looks at .mobi, and it looks at one other. So this report wonders about the potential competition for COM and how long that will take, and thinks that competition for COM itself is not likely in the near future, but sees value in differentiation, innovation of new TLDs, but says those those benefits are not predictable. They're too speculative, and does see value in IDNs and community-based TLDs. The report focuses on trademark protections. It analyzed the past rights protection mechanisms in .diz and .info, and said there was variance in how registries implemented them, and also that in the new TLD program there was a need to make them standard and improve upon them. So the market impact basically talks about the benefits of differentiation, IDNs and community-based TLDs, and pretty much focuses just on trademark protection costs and no others, and says that. So I think that,
there's nothing that ICANN disagrees with in the GAC letter on market analysis and economic impacts. There's been a series of independent studies done. All of them look at the benefits of new TLDs and calls them speculative. They all expect innovation, but does not know where that's going to come from or what it's going to be. And then instructs us to mitigate costs, which is the sense of the purpose of the other overarching issues, right? The malicious conduct mitigation and the trademark protection. So I think ICANN, you know, has spent, I'll just say, between $1 and $2 million on economic studies on this field with some of the most respected economists there are, some of which have been referred to us by others, not our choice, so they're independent. On registry, registrar separation, is there a slide on this? So we agree totally with the GAC position that that registry, registrar separation should be done in a way to foster competition and innovation. And the board, in discussing this, separated it into two issues. One was whether registries and registrars can be co-owned, and the other is the potential for data abuse. One of the concerns was whether a co-owned registry registrar could be the source of more abuse because of co-mingled data. And the board decided that whether that's so or not is a matter of contention, but the board decided to separate those two issues. That regulation of this marketplace was difficult because, one, ICANN is not a regulator. Two, regulations regarding co-ownership are extremely hard to enforce in a compliance regime. And three, there would be much money spent with non-value-added purpose. So the board decided to let the market develop, but put strong preventions in the registry agreement regarding potential abuses of data. And so that's resulted in the code of conduct that's appended to the registry agreement. It's right at the end of the base agreement, increasing auditing requirements. And of course, in the case where there's negative effects to competition, those competition issues can be referred to the appropriate governmental authorities. So Department of Justice in the United States, I think the European Commission in Europe. So, reading the words that, fostering competition, we think we're in alignment there. As far as protection of rights, I really need to look at the GAC letter. Protection of rights. Yeah. Let me find this for a second. I don't want to get exactly what you said. So, everybody here is familiar with the work that's been done in trademark protection. ICANN created the working group of IP constituents, the IRT, to develop solutions for trademarks, and then tested those trademarks against the policy with the GNSO group, the STI, and also created this temporary drafting group to further hone trademark protections. Can you go to the next slide? And so created this sort of network of trademark protections that provides new protections throughout the registry life cycle. So before a registry is launched, the Trademark Clearinghouse provides two services
to protect trademarks, trademark claims in Sunrise. And then after registry launch, there's the URS and a post-delegation process, and we've also implemented WHOIS. I read in the GAC letter that that 50% of respondents didn't understand the implications of the new GTLD program. I think that's really important, and it's part of ICANN's communication campaign, in which I hope we all participate in order to ensure that knowledge of the new GTLD program and its implications for small, medium, and large businesses, both as far as opportunities and risks, are well communicated. So I think that certain improvements have been made since Guidebook 4 into the trademark protections, and I talked about them in Module 3. But the community objection's been enhanced. But that's only one thing. But the URS in response to the IP constituency has been accelerated. So I think, you know, again, the IP constituency and proponents of business will continue to press for more protections. But at the end of the day, you know, the protections suggested by the IRT were essentially adopted, with a notable exception of the globally protected marks list, which is kind of difficult. So I think, you know, ICANN's been responsive there.
Kurt,
yes.
Before you move to another topic, would you like to comment on the particular request from the International Olympic Committee? I know that there have been a number of GAC members raising this on the GAC list, and how that relates to what you envision regarding trademarks.
Without looking at the draft reply, which is still in draft form off the top of my head, there's been a couple of improvements, and that's inclusion of trademarks approved by statute or protections of treaty organizations. So those should enhance protections for the IOC. But a topic of discussion with them that we'll want to have in our meeting is the protection of generic terms. And so I'm not sure to the extent their terms, you know, their letter talks a lot about protection for trademarks, and there is protection for trademarks in the current guidebook, and there's new protections for trademarks protected by statute and also for treaty organizations. So I'm not sure yet is more or less the protection of what I would call a generic term, if that is trademarked by the Olympic Committee, and what the effect of that trademark is. And we plan to have, you know, we plan to have a meeting with their representative while we're here in Cartagena to work that out.
You mentioned generic terms. So are you thinking of examples like .bank?
Well, I was thinking of their letter and a term like .Olympic, and so whether that is protected or not. You know, IOC as a treaty, or, you know, as an organization could be protected, but Olympic as a generic term, I don't know if that's protected or not. So there's been some improvements, really based on the OECD and WIPO letter, and also the inclusion of trademarks by statute, and but I don't know about the other end. We plan to meet with them while they're here.
Does anyone want to comment on that at this time? Okay, please, Italy.
Thank you. So this problem of Olympics, I think if we look at the formalities, like being a protected trademark or not, is... something that would not, in my opinion, and not be an isolated case. So maybe, I don't know if you have in mind something like having some special provisions in the startup of the new registry, and so because I'm pretty sure that a case similar to this one will happen again and again and in different time frames, so it's even more complicated. So I ask you what you think about that. Some sunrise provisions or what?
So the way the guidebook is constructed and meant to work is there's a set of protections for trademarks that have been expanded somewhat, and then there's a set of protections for community names. And so there's a set of protections around there that have a different test. And, the community protections are meant to capture place names or religious organizations or other communities with some standing, meaning they've been in existence for some time and they have some size. So that combination is meant to cover that. And then the interesting test is to bring up specific examples and see how that might or might not work. And that's, kind of where we're not to response to the IOC yet, is doing some of that testing. Bill? Oh.
Please, EU Commission.
Thanks. William D., European Commission. Actually, it's a question about trademarks, but not about the Olympic Committee. Is that okay? I sense there weren't perhaps any more about the Olympics. It relates to the advice given by the GAC in Nairobi, actually. I think that was on DAG 3. And I understand that arose because of a concern, actually, about the fact there may be different treatment for trademarks according to which jurisdiction they're in, resulting from the proposal there should be substantive examination requirement for trademarks. And without wanting to read out the whole CAC comment, which is quite long, there's basically a request there should be no discrimination according to jurisdiction. Is that something that's been dealt with in DAG 5, in your opinion? Thank you.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's jurisdiction where trademarks have substantive evaluation before they register trademarks, and some that are not, and the test varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I'm not a trademark attorney, but what the clearinghouse test does is meant to bring those trademarks up to sort of the same test. So even all trademarks can be included in the clearinghouse as long as they're registered, and then how they're used in the sunrise and trademark claims process depends on whether they've had substantive review or not. If they hadn't, the clearinghouse can ask for an application to ascertain that the trademark is used and in the same way that a trademark from a jurisdiction with substantive review would go through. So I think through it and I gab, and then I kind of distill it down into all trademarks are included in the clearinghouse. If you want to make a sunrise claim, then the clearinghouse will evaluate whether, it's actually in use as is trademarks from other jurisdictions. With regard to IP claims, that test isn't required, that trademarks from all jurisdictions can avail themselves of trademark claims. So, I think it is fair and has been brought up to date.
Germany, please.
Yes, thank you for this clarification. It is our position that there should be no difference between the form of the trademarks, whether it is in the jurisdiction, whether you have this extended evaluation or not. And by the way, it's not only in respect of the sunrise period where we have this problem. We have it also for the uniform rapid suspension system, where the requirement is to some in some cases that you have to have an extended evaluation. I can say, speaking of, on behalf of my government, this we consider quite problematic. Thank you.
So in the past, when new GTLDs were developed, each registry could make its own rules regarding who could avail themselves of a Sunrise processor or IP claims process. And so a registry in some jurisdiction could say, trademark registrations from jurisdictions that don't have the substantive review can't avail themselves of the service. And what the guidebook does is allow every single trademark, every single registered trademark, gets into a clearinghouse, gets into the clearinghouse, and then can be evaluated, and then the trademark clearinghouse will perform the evaluation if there's use of the trademark or not. So that trademark only has to do that one time for all registries, and then can avail themselves of the Sunrise process.
Any additional comments on that point? Germany, please.
Yes, just for clarification, but for this process and within the trademark clearance house, as far as I understand, the fee has to be borne by the trademark owner, and that makes a different practice for the different legislation, and that is something we think is quite difficult.
EU Commission?
Yes, I hesitate a bit because I'm certainly not a trademark lawyer or specialist, but just a question for clarification. Do I understand from what you said, Kurt, that the intention is that trademark owners who can't demonstrate they're using their trademark should lose their rights to protection?
So I'm not a trademark lawyer either. So I think for IP claims, all trademarks are honored, and there's a notice given to all potential registrants of an IP claim. For Sunrise, trademark owners demonstrate use.
Okay, if there are no more comments on that point, Kurt, if you could move to the next.
So post-delegation disputes with governments, there are two issues, I think. One is that the TLD of a geographic name complies with the laws of that jurisdiction, and we think that's a requirement that can be imposed by the government when it approves the TLD, and that. That ICANN's agreed to follow that ICANN has agreed to follow the rulings of courts in those jurisdictions. That was incorporated from the last GAC letter. So I think, I don't have a lot to say about post delegation disputes with governments. I'd like to go on. Do you want to say something?
Yes, I'd like to give the floor to Norway.
Thank you. It's Eternal Storm from Norway. A comment on that. As we read the proposed final version on this topic, this a change of wording is a clear weakening of the post delegation, because the words have been changed for "I can will comply" to now in the final version it says "may implement." So if you can comment on that, it's the wording establishes a clear weakening that I can may or may not comply with a court decision. Thank you.
Yeah, I asked that question too. So that what you read from is the registry agreement, and what ICANN doesn't want to do in its registry agreement is, or the quote you read is from the registry agreement, and what ICANN doesn't want to do is make a commitment to the registries in that regard. So it doesn't, ICANN's compliance with the laws, ICANN's agreement to comply with the laws of the courts of a competent jurisdiction don't really have, are related to our duties to a registry. So our duties are not to the registry, so that's why the wording is infirm in the registry agreement. So we had several emails back and forth about that, but that doesn't weaken ICANN's commitment to comply with the laws or the rulings of the courts.
Norway, please.
Well, it's also referred to in the sample letter from in Module 2. It's also changed there. But as I understand, the obligations for ICANN, if they will be able to comply with a court ruling in the jurisdiction of the country where the GTLD is registered, they must have that into their contract obligations with the new registry. So unless they will then be sued by the registry if you don't have that as a contract obligation. But did you also then say, is this contract term negotiable? Is it in fact then in those cases with a new registry agreement where the government give approval of non-objection, then you will put that explicitly into that registry agreement that ICANN will comply with a legally the court decision. So that if my question is to clarify, is this proposed registry agreement, is it generic to cover everything, or will you then amend those registry agreements you make with in those cases where you have a letter of support and non-objection, that you'll make that clear in that specific agreement? Or, please clarify. Thank you.
I don't know if I can clarify. I can clarify that ICANN's made the commitment to follow the ruling of the courts. So your idea sounds like a good one, but not being the company lawyer, I don't know. So what I'll do is take your comment and idea back and respond back with the way that ICANN can best assure that we're going to comply with our commitment.
Thank you, Kurt. Did you want the floor? Okay, please, EU Commission.
Thank you. Yes, sorry, I can't resist the temptation as a native English speaker, but it says here a court of competent jurisdiction, but it doesn't say a court of competent jurisdiction in the country concerned. Does that mean that there could be other courts which might come into play here? I mean, I think the original concern of GAC members was that if a government has a dispute with a TLD in its own territory where it has an agreement about the operation of that TLD, that the courts we're thinking about are the courts in our country. But I notice that's missing. Is that intentional, or is it something that can be updated in the final text?
Yeah, I think this was probably a shortcut in the slide, but it was intended to be in the country of the GOTLD.
Okay, with that, I think we can move to the next topic.
Geographical names. So I think here there's a difference between the GAC position and what's in the guidebook. And I just want to, I've given this story many times, but I just want to introduce this with, the guidebook or the GNSO recommendations really started out with a blank sheet of paper as far as protections for geographic names, and in fact recommended that there essentially should be none other than those afforded by the community objection procedure. And over the course of many discussions with the GAC and the CCNSO, a fairly systemic set of protections for geographic names have been developed at the top level and second level. So the country names and in the ISO lists and other lists and all their translations are protected at the top level, and country names, in fact, are blocked from delegation, at least from the first round. And, you know, a discussion we'll want to have is, you know, maybe that should be changed to until there's new policy advice. So we should have that discussion. And then there's a difference with regard to the definition of country names. And that is that the board directed that we somewhat narrow the name of country names to what's on the ISO and other lists, and not just they were looking for more definition rather than the definition of a meaningful representation of a country name. And so that's a difference between the guidebook and the GAC position. But I just want to mention that all the translations of those names are included too, so that's many. And then with regard to city names, there's so many city names that are generic or shared that protection for all city names could be problematic, but that capital city names are protected. Also regional names, also sub-regional names in the ISO 3166-2 list, which are very many. So I just want to say we've come a long way. There's protection for country names at the second level, and I think we have agreement on the second level. So we've come a long way as far as developing geographic names for the GAC. I think something you want to talk about here and the board wants to talk about is that where there is a specific difference between policy implementation and GAC advice, that there be a good faith approachment to trying to settle those differences, and that's one of the things we want to accomplish here. And if we could have meaningful working sessions, I think that would be a significant accomplishment for ICANN if the board and GAC could work together on that. So I think that's those are the three clarifications for where there's differences between board and GAC advice. But again, I want to advertise or at least state that there's been a lot of good faith work to create a lot of protections for geographic names. And we think additional protections do exist through the community-based objections. So we think there's protections there.
Yes, thank you. And first of all, I would like to thank you for the clarification on this last issue on the community-based objection in the current guidebook. Which shows that probably, at least as we are concerned, our views what a community objection is and should be are not met, because we see it is very difficult, because we also see a community objection has the potential to be an alternative for extending some lists with names that have to be protected. But then we need a very clear a protection mechanism, and it would be an indirect protection mechanism with this community objection. And there are some clauses that we maybe do not understand, but it's really difficult. How can, for example, a city or region make sure, and the government of the city make sure, that there is some kind of damage occurring in the consequence of the introduction of TLD, which they are not familiar with. They don't know what will the applicant be yes, proceeding, what are the intentions of having this TLD. And that I think this is one issue where I think a community objection for a city would not be possible. And there are other questions where a government has to demonstrate that it's really a representative of a community. That's also something we, from our understanding, think that it's if a local government or a mayor of a city that he has, who is elected, he has the right to be representing the community he's speaking of. And that is something I just like. I do not understand, frankly. And coming to maybe a specialty we have in our country, the city names or names of at least administrative regions are protected by national law. That is similar to maybe it has some is similar to trademark protection. And I really don't understand whether ICANN would respect this legal protection mechanisms or not, because in this it's not part of this objection principles up to now. And yes, that is a perspective that's not considered up to now. Thank you.
So can I try to rephrase that to ensure I have an understanding? So if an applicant applies for a city name and says, and it's clear in the application that it could represent a city or might represent a city, then a community objector could prove detriment, you know, could prove harm because the applicant has said so. But if the applicant, you know, somebody help me with a generic city, so applies for a generic name that's also a city and says the purpose of my application is this generic purpose, there's no harm to this. They can't prove detriment, but later that TLD could change its model and, in fact, cause detriment to the community, right? It could be an after the fact. And then what's the remedy of the city because it's too late to object? Is that right? Yeah. So I know so I want to go think about that. But I know in certain cases there's a post-delegation dispute model. So if an applicant changes the purpose of its TLD and violates the purpose, you can go back and make an objection even after delegation. And if an applicant doesn't live up to its promises, it can. But I think I understand your issue, and I want to think about it some more.
Excuse me if I interact directly, because I do not really understand what could be, because it will end in some kind of panel. Because if you have an objection, probably you receive a counter-objection from the applicant, and then it goes to a panel, and there is a panel decision. And the panel decision is a yes or no, probably. And yes, there is no way of a compromise, and that is something I miss, that you don't have procedural mechanisms that would try to lead to a compromise, because in many cases there will be a possibility, but you only have the chance I accept it or not. And yes, it makes it also difficult, and the question will be for the community. Maybe a city would object because a generic name is will be used by some commercial company. Okay, the commercial company will say afterwards, we will not use it as a city name and have some protection mechanism. That means the whole cost for the panel would rest at the community. It's not only the $5,000 for filing the objection. It would be and that is something every community has to be aware of. I recall these panel decisions. They may end up in very high numbers of U.S. dollars, and that may be a problem for many of these cities or regions that consider their names protected. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Germany, Norway, do you like to comment?
Yes, thank you. It's Sune Storm from Norway. Just a quick comment. I think we will come back to this in the later years, but on the a probability to having country and territory names into the G space. I think a lot of governments have strong opinions about, well, as you see here, city and capital city names. I think we will have even stronger concerns and objections to even touch that and put that into the G space. So I think, but still, just I just wanted to make a note on that. But I think that will become revisited at a later stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Arnulf. Did you have any further comments on that? Oh, yes, please go ahead, Arab League.
Thank you, Heather. I'm Khaled Fouda, representing the League of Arab States. And actually, the Arab area was one of the reasons recently added with the addition of the six regions that are defined by the UNESCO. So the term actually that's used at the UNESCO is Arab states. And this new geographic regions, or this new list, does not have some sort of a short name or abbreviated name. So unlike the UN list, I think it does. So, for example, I don't believe that if Asia and the Pacific decide to apply for a new GTLD to represent that region, they would go for .Asia and the Pacific. I mean, that's too long for a term. So I believe there should be a consideration for how to go by the term that that region would choose to apply for if it chooses to apply for a geoterm. Thank you.
So your specific comment really goes to .Arab as opposed to .Arab states, I think. And so what we try to do is hang our hat on a list. So what we could do is try to work together to find where that's published, because that's the results of our research. So I think after this, we should look at other lists and see what there is.
Okay, if there's no more on this topic, what else do we have?
Well, the end of the GAC letter goes to support of applicants. And it's something that that we all feel passionately about. And one of the tests, I think, that we're going to have when we measure the success of the new GTLD process is whether and how new TLDs and registrars and registrants and users are multiplied in areas where the DNS isn't widely used right now. And so we're for that. We've allocated $300,000 in the budget for non-financial means of support. So in establishing regional service centers or information centers around to help applicants understand the new GTLD process and apply. The problem's a little deeper with providing economic support. That can become very expensive. The new GTLD process is a zero-sum game. It's very revenue neutral, and as the process becomes more complex over time, my nervousness about being able to evaluate the applications for the amount of the fee increases. So the working group that is dedicated to applicant support is charged with finding sources of funds and then uses of funds, how to disperse them. We are helping them actively locate potential sources of grants or other sources of money outside ICANN that can be channeled into this. So we're for that. And then I think, so what we haven't talked about in this meeting, because it wasn't part of this GAC letter, but the other GAC letter is the morality and public order objection, or the REC 6 working group recommendations. What do we have slide-wise on that? And that is that, the new guidebook has adopted some of the recommendations of that working group, but in other areas where uncertain,
in other areas we're not certain about the recommendations of the working group, their weight as a policymaking body, or their consensus. And so one of the discussions we might be able to have with the GAC later in the week is what we think about the objection formerly known as morality and public order. So I discussed that more briefly, but I didn't know if there are any specific questions about that now, or an opportunity to create a forum about that later.
Are there any questions or comments on that topic? Yes, please, Germany.
Yes, thank you again. And I would like to come back to the trademark issues because I was not very clear whether we are going on with this discussion. I just wanted to know about more on ICANN's response to the GAC letter on DAC 4, because we have raised several issues. I cannot find adequate answers for. One of them is, for example, the question defensive registration. It was mentioned that we, as GAC, see great concerns, and in this respect, I didn't see an adequate answer for, because the GAC notes with great concern that brand owners continue to be faced with substantial and often prohibitive defensive registrations. This was an aspect that was the initial of our statement regarding trademark, which was not considered in the answer. A second one is, which I also think is very important and which we should further develop means how we could go further, is the lack of awareness in the trademark owner community of the process which is taking place now within ICANN. They have to be integrated in this process. They have to be aware of this. And there I would have expected that ICANN gives more answers what they are going to do. And I think the period we have this, after this campaign we have after a definition of decision of the introducing new GDLDs, I think it would be too short to come to an adequate exchange with trademark owners. And by the way, that would be too late for the trademark owners to maybe express their interest and also be part of the process. That is a concern I have. Maybe we as government, we are interested in having this kind of exchange between the various companies and ICANN, but I think it is also ICANN that has to show what will be the mechanisms that ICANN will have in this.
Yeah. So, can I? So yeah. So those are two good points. But let me start with the latter, because I think that's very important, and I talked about it a bit before. But it's certainly ICANN's a requirement for ICANN to provide sufficient notice on a broad basis to all regions about the new GTLD program, its opportunities and potential costs. And so that has to be a goal of the communications campaign. And if we think that that can't be accomplished in several months' time, then we need to make it longer. But as envisioned, it's presently several months of heightened communications to all regions. But I and everybody clearly at ICANN clearly agree that that's the goal of the communications campaign, is to avoid harm by any parties not knowing about the new GTLD process. It's not to market the new GTLD process. With respect to defensive registrations, I just there's been a lot of work done about defensive registrations and whether they're prohibitive or not. And this last version of the economic report, in fact, focuses solely on defensive registrations as the cost associated with the introduction of new TLDs. And I think there's other costs, but and so do we all. But and in all of that, the current report admits that there's two points to be made. One is that defensive registrations don't exist outside the very largest registries, and so brand owners aren't defensively registering outside the largest registries. And two is the purpose of all the new trademark protections, the one clearinghouse for all TLDs, this mandatory sunrise or IP claims period, a URS, and a post-delegation dispute model are all meant to relieve the need for defensive registrations. And, certainly they're not tested yet, but it's a uniform set of protections that are all new for all registries. So will there be defensive registrations? Yes, I'm sure there will be, and there'll be many of them. Will the cost be high? I don't know. I know the figures that trademark holders say they will incur, and I think it's a very important issue. I think ICANN's taken it, the whole big ICANN community has taken it very seriously in working over a period of 18 months on developing and then enhancing trademark protections.
If there are no additional comments on new TLDs, I'll give the floor to, I'm sorry, on trademark, I will give the floor to the United States. You've been waiting. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Suzanne Sen, United States. I just really wanted to kind of go to a threshold issue. Well, first, let me thank you again, Kurt. It's always useful to have you walk us through changes in the new text, especially when it hasn't been out for very long, and it's certainly challenging for us, still under review in Washington, and I'm pretty convinced my colleagues around the table have a lot of colleagues in national capital still trying to work their way through the document. So it's very useful to have your overview of how this version actually does meet concerns or the needs or the problems that have been identified by the GAC. And I think it's encouraging that you have such an optimistic assessment that the new version actually does address a lot of, if not all, of the GAC's concerns. What I'd like to actually make a pitch for, it was contained in the most recent GAC letter and in the very recent NTIA letter, which is it would be extremely helpful for this analysis that you have verbally shared with us to be actually provided to the community, not just to the GAC, in written form, because that would go a very long way to clarifying for the entire community what the rationale is. You know, on what basis have you determined, let's take any one of them, that the IP protections are sufficient? On what basis have you determined that the economic studies, in especially the most recent one, I have a question there, how are the results of that study, recently posted, going to influence changes to this so-called final version of the applicant guidebook? So, all due respect, and again, I'm very encouraged by your optimistic overview, but I think once it could be committed to writing so that there was a very, very clear expression of the rationale behind each and every change or each and every decision. Vertical integration, that's another example, I think, where there isn't a very clearly articulated rationale. So I would like to make that overarching point because it is, and to reinforce that as an outstanding request from the GAC. And just to flag a few other points that are, I think, interrelated. On route scalability, the GAC did ask if you had an intention to introduce a monitoring capability. And I think in the most recent letter from Peter Dengate-Thrush, I'm assuming that's from Peter and/or/the board and/or ICANN. We're not entirely sure how to understand that, but let's say the latest ICANN response indicates that the staff has been instructed to work on a model. but there's not a lot of detail in the letter as to what that model looks like. So you have, right now, you're saying you're ready to roll with about 1,000. And yet the economic study, the version that was issued right before Brussels, suggested there be a measured rollout of new GTLDs. I don't know how my colleagues might define the word measured, but I'm not sure measured equals 1,000. I confess, I don't know how to match up the number and the term. So again, having the rationale in writing as to how all of this fits together and how you have picked up the different inputs, and not just from the GAC, but from other parts of the community. One other issue that we have not spent a lot of time here, and I know we're running out of time, so Heather, I don't want to take too much more. Obviously, the objections issue remains an outstanding issue, and that clearly needs to be addressed in a lot more detail. And mitigating malicious conduct, I think that also remains an outstanding issue without a whole lot of detail as to how the concerns that have been expressed, not only by the GAC, but by other parts of the community, but just speaking for the GAC, our bottom line concern is ensuring that the harms to consumers can be mitigated. So I appreciate, again, the sort of optimistic overview, but would simply note we have an outstanding set of recommendations from our law enforcement communities around this table for some very concrete proposals. And I think that remains outstanding with no formal response as yet as to how those proposals are being addressed. And if I could just flag a concern that certainly has been shared with my agency, is that the current compliance effort seems to have been hit hard in terms of staff and budget resources. So, again, contract compliance is currently a problem, and I think you can appreciate then the concern that if you ratchet up to 1,000 new top-level domains, can the compliance program meet the demands of dealing with malicious conduct with 1,000 new top-level domains? So I think I will leave it at that. I hope I've been clear, but I think having your personal opinion or your verbal overview is, of course, very helpful. But I just would restate the outstanding request that the rationale be formally provided for each and every decision. Thank you.
So just in response to a couple, your comments are very well taken, and they should be those considerations should be addressed before the GTLD process is launched. I want to point out that we published this version of the guidebook earlier than any other version of the guidebook, a few days in advance of the GAC 15 working day requirement to consider them. But I understand that it is a lot of material. I'd ask GAC members to read the public comment analyses that associate each version of the guidebook that for each change in the guidebook or each not change as a result of public comment, attempt to describe why changes are made or not made and why changes are made. And those were updated in response to, even after the, they weren't released until the guidebook was released because they were updated after the Trondheim board resolutions, for example, in order to reflect the board thinking in those. And we also publish board papers now and other rationale. I think we could go back and take all of those comment analyses through the five versions of the guidebook and two sets of expert excerpts and try to synthesize that into a document. But the thinking and rationale is behind there. With regard to root scaling, 1,000 TLDs does sound like a lot, even to me. The expected rate is really much less than that. It's really about 200 or 250 TLDs a year. To somebody running TLDs, that's a big number. But to the root zone and the people that operate the root zone, that's not a big number. So if we talk about measured with regard to root zone scaling, that's certainly thought to be a pretty small number. And you're going to have Suzanne Wolf and others come in and talk about that. But when
she or Steve Crocker talk about monitoring mechanisms, they're really talking about things you're measuring almost with a calendar instead of a stopwatch, that the sorts of monitoring mechanisms that'll have to be implemented, are not complex. Even at 200 or 300 or even 1,000, it's such a slow-moving growth to something like the root zone that the monitoring mechanisms aren't complex. With regard to objections, we're really interested in hearing what the GAC has to say, especially with the objection formerly known as morality in public water. We had a consultation session with the working group. There was some uncertainty as to what the specific recommendations were. We sent a set of clarifying questions to that working group to try to ascertain, specific role of the GAC might be going forward, or ALAC, or the board. So we want to make sure we get that straight. And then, with regard to malicious conduct, we convene sessions of law enforcement, the anti-phishing working group, the RISG first. That's how those solutions that are in place in the guidebook have been developed. Are we done? We'll never be done. We want to continue to hear and continue to implement increased protections for malicious conduct. There's some in this new version of the guidebook. We continue to work on other concrete ones, and as other concrete suggestions become available, we want to continue to implement those to try to stay one step ahead. And then, finally for compliance, I agree with you, and there are concrete plans for augmenting compliance. The budget is increased. Some people can argue the rate of increase isn't as high as it should be, which it could be a decrease, but it's really, really a net increase. The statistics, if you look at the statistics, the number of deaccredited registrars are up, the number of enforcement actions are way up, and there is a concrete, operational plan in place for increasing compliance, registry liaison, IANA, all the ICANN functions in anticipation of the new GTLD program. So, Suzanne, you asked some very complex questions that can't be answered in a short back and forth period, but I just wanted to say something to indicate that they're within our contemplation, and we agree that they're important.
Thank you for that, Kurt. I know that Denmark is asking for the floor, and then we have Italy and Norway, okay? And then I think we need to, and EU Commission, and then we need to conclude this portion because I know Kurt is expected at the board meeting. So please go ahead, Denmark.
Thank you. It's Joy Kahan from Denmark. Firstly, thank you for your presentation and overview. And with regard to your initial comments about the title of the document, we have an issue of the whole process, because on the website, and as you explained, the board might or might not take a decision on Friday on this document, and the deadline, as I remember, is on the 10th as well, which is the same day as the board might take a decision. And as so I wonder how this will work, especially we think that the board really should take time to probably review all the comments posted during this period, which is also very short and very limited for our consultations at local authorities and with local interests and stakeholders back home. But this actually also feeds into just one example, that there are many issues that are still not clarified, whether community-based applications or whether it's a GOTLD and these kind of jurisdictional issues as well, when they are not clarified, what what's the process or what's the rationale behind this process or these deadlines? Thank you.
So I think that's a very important question. There's two answers that I have off the top of my head. One was, what is a mechanism to getting to a final guidebook that the board could consider? And so taking comments up to the moment of consideration, like the ICANN budget is one of them. We will be summarizing comments as they come in for the board. So there's one edition of comment summary done already. There'll be another one available tomorrow for the board, and then one before consideration. So the board will have available to it recent comments, you know, the most recent comments. If those comments go to this isn't enough time or the issues are more serious, then the board would take that into account too, that more time is required.
Okay, thank you for that, because we are currently drafting, I think, a response, and hopefully it will come before the 10th, but it's very tight. Thank you.
Kurt apparently needs to get to the board meeting right away. However, Karen will remain to answer questions. Thank you, Karen. So thank you, Kurt, for being here today. I'm sure we'll speak again before the end of the week.
Sure will. Thank you very much, everybody.
All right. So after Denmark, we have Italy.
Okay, thank you. Two very brief observations. The first one is on the process that we have in front of us. That is a process for a free application for new GTLDs. This means as many as the market will be able to promote or to present. So this is a typical problem that as more studies are going on, and I followed with attention Susan's explanation, the complexity of the problem increases. And so the real point is, in the end, if ICANN will be able to provide to us the assurances that this analysis are at least satisfactorily conducted and the process can go on. But so otherwise this process could be endless also, because different interests of different stakeholders could conduct a long way of further studies. This is a general comment. The second one is regarding the root scaling report. And this is... certainly, if the final number will be maximum of 1,000 per year, this never will mean that there will be 1,000 of new GTLDs per year. And since the last meeting, ICANN introduced the concept of the batches that may be operated and may be inserted per year. And also, 250 per year. Can you imagine that ICANN will be able to sign 250 contracts, one per working day in 1 year? So I see that the process will be more slow than potentially, also for administrative reasons, conducted by ICANN. And initially, if you remember, the SAC report on root scaling was a sort of a sentence that was waited by the community in order to know how many new GTLDs can be introduced per year. And initially, someone said 10,000 or enormous numbers. And then part of the Security and Stability Committee, also with the support of the root scaling group, started just going down even drastically, because it's not so clear that the root scaling, the root survey system may resolve all the problems, including DNSSEC, including new IDNs, and so on. So now, at least this is not longer a problem. So we may conclude that with the administrative point consideration of ICANN from one side and all the process and the root scaling is a capability, this is no longer a problem. At least this is completed. So is my input.
Thank you for that, Italy. We have Norway next.
Yes, thank you. Just a general comment, and I certainly won't ask the ICANN staff to answer the question. So it's my point is just regarding this letter we received on the 23rd of November from Peter. I think we can ask Peter this question, but I sensed a little bit, not the friendliest tone in his letter towards GAC. And the letters also highlighted some important issues which has also been pointed out by the Accountability and Transparency Review Team regarding when and how GAC interact with the PDP, the policy, when they come into this this process. So, but that is probably something to ask Peter about and maybe also for GAC to discuss further. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Norway. We have next the EU Commission.
Thank you. I can save time, actually, because it was a point already raised by Denmark, and which has been mentioned. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any additional comments at this time? No, I don't see any requests for the floor. Okay. Well, we have about 10, 15 minutes before Avery Doria comes to update the GAC on the work being conducted in relation to applicants that need additional need or support. And so we may have a brief discussion then on that topic a bit further. In the interim, then, how shall we make use of this time? Shall we discuss maybe some of the issues that have been raised in terms of the process and not necessarily get into a substantive discussion? And then, as I say, when Avery arrives, we can return to that particular topic. And then I think we're due for a coffee break. So, all right. So, in terms of process, a number of points were made in terms of understanding what is the meaning of a draft applicant guidebook that's now called final. Kurt did update us a bit on that and did respond to Denmark's question, but is that sufficiently clear? Is this of concern more broadly among colleagues here? How the timing of that works, Sweden.
Thank you very much. It's Maria from Sweden here. I very much want to agree what Julia from Denmark is saying. That is actually a discussion we have had back in Sweden, the government together with our reference group concerning internet governance-related issues. And, of course, this has been very much on our agenda in Sweden in front of this ICANN/GAC meeting. And one of the things that we absolutely talked about is actually this process and this working plan of this applicant guidebook, and also the what Julia also said, actually the headline, the actually just calling it a final document means that actually how much changes could be made in other versions, or actually having a final document kind of gives signals that there's going to be no other version in the future. So we are very much concerned, and that's what I want to point out. It's not only the Swedish government, it's also actually the internet community in Sweden having severe problems with this process, I have to say. So thank you, Julia. I really want to echo what you were saying. Thank you.
EU Commission, please.
Thank you, yes. I think you picked on an important point for us to reflect on, actually, and as I said, Denmark raised the question I made. Kurt's opening comments, actually, on the reason behind giving it that title, the draft final, means that it's available for the board to adopt. which in turn I think implies that the staff think that all of the major problems have been solved. Otherwise, I presume they wouldn't put it in forward front of the board to have it solved. Very recently, we've had a letter from the chairman of the board giving a response to the GAC concerns on recent versions of the DAG. I think we should avoid, therefore, giving the impression to the board before Friday, given there's a possibility they may adopt on Friday, that we're happy with that response. And that's purely because we haven't discussed it, actually, in the GAC yet. We've had a chance to have an exchange with Kurt today. But I get the sense that many GAC members still feel that there are substantive issues outstanding that need resolving. And we are, you know, entering a week where there's a possibility the board may make a decision on Friday to proceed based on draft applicant guidebook, which we may feel doesn't yet resolve all of the public policy issues that we've raised. And if that's the case, then I think we need to signal that to the board before they make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Next, I have Norway, then Germany.
Yes, thank you, Heather. It goes in the same line as the European Commission, and also with reference to our last letter to the board, where we indicate to the ICANN that we will make best efforts to provide at least a preliminary comments here in Cartagena, like we indicated. So of course, that raises the question, are we going to make sort of our final comments here? But I think that's something we need to then make sure that the ICANN board understands, that we want to have a possibility to make more comments. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for that. Germany.
Yes, thank you. From our point, I think we are, as you know, quite supportive for introducing new GDLDs in general. We think it is a good idea. And we tried also to foster the discussion. But having that said, we see, especially after the last letters, that there are a big number of issues that are not solved. And frankly, I cannot speak only on behalf of, not behalf of me, but only not only behalf of our ministry. I have to interact with various colleagues. And that's exactly the question of process. I cannot decide or make decision or accept something regarding trademark issues, because I'm not a trademark specialist. I'm responsible more for telecommunications side. These are issues we have, and in the trademark side, you have to you have to explain the difficulties and the discussions, because if it comes to technical question, that it's also a very challenging discussion. Another issue I want to mention is that we have on the other side, groups of the governments, cities, our federal states, that are now confronted with applications, and they also want to know what is on stake, what is the discussion, how is this sentence to be interpreted. I do not understand the objection process. What is about, and all these more detailed questions, which I think are a bit difficult to discuss here in GAC, but they need to be solved, and we need some kind of forum where we can express these detailed questions just understanding a bit more about the process. It's more a technical question. And having said that, I think there is quite a lot, I see quite a lot of work to be done. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Germany. Did anyone else wish to comment on this point, please? United States?
Thank you, Heather. Actually, I think your emphasis on process is really helpful, and maybe this we should start to contemplate some of the points we want to take up with the board in the joint GAC board exchange. And one of them would be, in the event you do determine to approve this text on Friday, because Kurt made it clear that that is a possibility, then maybe we need to ask them to please outline for us how they intend to proceed in consistent with the bylaws provision, that in the event the GAC has offered advice and the board does not feel it can accept it. My understanding is that the first step in that process is the board comes to the GAC to seek to resolve the differences. So that is a slightly, that goes beyond what we're seeing in the exchanges of letters, where actually we're being informed either by Kurt here, and I think Norway has noted this in a more slightly positive tone, and then in letters, in writing, in a slightly more dismissive tone, if you will, that there are areas of disagreement. Certainly the bylaws provide for the board to have that leeway, that flexibility in saying, well, we disagree with you. But there is a step that hasn't yet been taken, and perhaps we need to more formally ask how that step will be taken and in what timeline. Thank you.
Kenya, please.
Thank you. I'd like to agree with all my colleagues regarding this important issue of process and timelines, and particularly agree that we do need to ask the board to provide us with a, you know, with a written, more specific, you know, input into how not just the GAC's advice, but all other stakeholders, how, I mean, and whether we can be able to trace our input throughout this, especially this GTLD process, or not just the GTLD process, but other PDP-related processes as well. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Kenya. Are there any other inputs on this particular topic? In terms of other issues that were raised, I believe it was the United States that wanted to make the point about providing a rationale for decisions taken and being explicit about whether the board believes it has accepted or rejected advice that we may have given to them. Are there colleagues around the table that would like to comment on that particular point? I think Kenya has related it to a broader issue of the treatment of GAC advice, regardless of whether we're talking about new GTLDs or not. So nevertheless, we may wish to keep that in mind. Denmark, please.
Thank you. No, I was just like to say that I think it's very important that we have the rationale for the decision made or not made. So I support what has just been said about this and to take this up with the board. Thanks.
Thank you for that. All right. Italy.
Yeah, the question of decision about GAC advice. We discussed it here in the GAC many times about what we consider a GAC advice. And also the review panel on accountability and transparency has produced the work and elaborated about that. And I think that in the interaction with the board, we should, in the joint working group, try to evaluate for this difficult process that is new GTLDs, because normally speaking, GAC advice are the result of a negotiation and then in the end are rather vague or not very specific on what should be implemented. Then maybe what is missing is the fact that the ICANN board or ICANN staff with the board should interpret how to implement this advice, and then to explain with some details about implementation problems and also the range of possibilities that are in front of any decisions. So this has to be improved as a process, and is also something that the review panel is recommending to ICANN and to the GAC together. So since the new GTLDs is such an important asset, let's say, of ICANN, we should take this as a very crucial exercise.
Thank you. Okay. I don't see Avery in the room. And so what I propose is we have a break now and reconvene in 30 minutes, and hopefully she will be here. If not, let's continue with sort of our conclusion, at least for this afternoon, on this topic, and then we will discuss the Accountability and Transparency Review Team recommendations. Okay? All right. Let's have a break. Thanks.